I want to start by taking all the blame for any media problems this morning. It's my fault. As anybody who gets up in front and speaks does, I thought of more things to say between when I sent all my media stuff to Greg last week and when I showed up this morning. I thought of most of it last night and this morning, actually. And of course, the idea started in my brain, and it was so good, according to me, that it had to be inserted in there, so I caused all these problems when I got here this morning. So the people out there, back there, that do all this, they're great. Me, not so great. So any glares that you've sent back there, please take them back, send them an apology note, whatever. But I apologize for that. Godflix, you just saw the promo for it. Very excited for that. That's something that I've been part of through the years. I'm really excited to be talking about the movie Tree of Life this year. You can find the list of all those movies on the website for Jake as well or on their Facebook page. I'd recommend that you try to watch as many of them as possible, because otherwise some of us are going to get up here and talk about movies you've never seen. And you know how fun that is to be in a conversation about a book or a movie that you haven't seen and somebody else is telling you all about it as if you care because you have no idea what they're talking about. So don't make us that guy or those guys or those girls and guys when we talk about those movies with you. So, but anyways, glad to be here. Oh, Don asked me to tell you, remind you, there's little business cards. They look like Netflix cards, but they actually say Godflix on them. Those are for you to share with friends, to leave in coffee shops, to put in the break room at work, to tell other people about what's going to be happening here in August and to invite them to come. So announcements out of the way. I have to give a little disclaimer, and that is that I recognize and I remember people more than the normal amount. And by that, I mean that if I've met someone before, I usually recognize them and often even know how I met them. I know their name. I know how we're connected. And so it's not uncommon for me to run into someone at some random place, approach them, say hello, and then realize that they have no idea who I am. I've become used to this through the years. I understand that I am abnormal in the ability that I have for some reason to recognize someone and figure out who they are, and they don't remember that we've ever met. So I'm telling you that so I can tell you this. I've been here to speak on several occasions through the years. And although it might seem like to me that we know each other a lot better than we actually do, I do think it's safe to assume that we're beyond introductions. So if you've been around Jacob's Well for any amount of time, at some point I've been up here talking about something. And so there is a ridiculous biography in your Sunday paper that if you really need to know something more about me, you can read. It's not that interesting, so don't waste your time. But just to say that I'm happy to be here. Like Don said, my name's Andy. I've been to Haiti with the group. I've been here to speak, and I'm thrilled to be back today. So here we go. I am not a preacher. I want to make that clear. I'm a storyteller. And I think that part of that is for me more than for you to know, in that I'm much more comfortable telling stories than I am preaching sermons. So you all come to a place called Jacob's Well that meets in a school. It's not a traditional church. Maybe that is more comfortable for you anyways. You don't want to hear sermons. You want to hear people tell some stories, because stories are something we can relate to. And when it really comes down to it, the Bible, especially the gospel, is a story. It's a pretty darn good story. And that's what we come here to wrap our lives around, is the hope and the truth that comes in that story. So in the beginning of that story, in Genesis, the first book, and in Genesis 1, the first chapter of the first book, we find God and God's creating. He's bringing into being that which didn't previously exist. And as God is getting some dirt under his divine fingernails, that's a term or a phrase that one of my seminary professors used, as God is getting dirt under the divine fingernails, God steps back after creating, looks at what has just been made, and makes the observation that it is good. So over and over in the creation story, we have God creating something, stepping back, and I'm using human. I know God is not like me and doesn't do this and take steps and doesn't have feet and all that, but so imagine God is creating in whatever divine, mysterious ways God creates, and then God steps back in whatever kind of ways. I'm guessing with soft, you know, he could creep up on you and he could walk very quietly if he walked, but God creates, steps back, looks at it, and then realizes and claims it is good. Now, over and over, the sea, the sky, all the creatures, the plant life, everything is created, and God says it is good. And then in the end, save the best for last, right? God creates you and me, us, humans, Finn, and says it is very good. So we have this good creation, this world that we live in, and we have us, people who are created and given the blessing and also the curse, the challenge of tending to all this. And in everything, God says it's very good. Yet somewhere along the way, I think that we have forgotten that the people around us, all the things around us, are good, that they're actually very good. And we just see them as stuff, people to use, people to hurt us, things that can go bad and break and need fixing and cost money and all those things. So there's this group of people in New York that do a lot of just ridiculous stuff. And I don't know about you, when I see people doing ridiculous stuff that's fun and playful and loving and hopeful and brings people together to smile, it reminds me that it is good. It's actually very good. So we're going to see an example of something that they've done. It's not going to work. Do you want me to act it out? I would need so many volunteers, and we would need to rehearse. It would be ridiculous. So what I was going to show you, has anybody ever heard of Improv Everywhere? I've shown a video from them before. In many ways, they're kind of the original flash mobbers. Everybody's familiar with the term flash mob now, when people just all of a sudden start in full choreography and singing and dancing and all that kind of stuff. Well, they do things that aren't always song and dance, but they are just as ridiculous and just as entertaining for those that see them. So in particular, the one that I was going to show you was they get to a park, and there's a big, extravagant carousel. So you know the carousels with the horses and all the animals, and the kids ride on them, go round and round, really fun, right? Well, they show up, and they bring a whole bunch of people dressed up, and then they also have some people broadcasting, so they have microphones, people in jockey uniforms, like horse racing. And they get up on these horses and they're acting the part. There's people pretending to bet, kind of like looking like 60s type dress, and they're betting on the horse race. Everybody's cheering. A bunch of people are just not sure what's going on because they were just out on a Saturday afternoon at the park. And they are broadcasting this thing, and they go round and round and round. And obviously, how do you know who wins? Because everybody's going in a circle. They're getting back to where they started from, right? And in the end, this kid, this maybe 6-year-old kid or something like that, ends up winning, and they go crazy for him, and they give him, the big bouquet of flowers, and they interview him, and basically it comes down to them asking, how did you do it? What did you do? And he's like, it was good. He just says, good. That's all he says. I think he's kind of nervous too. So they're like, so why did you choose this horse that you got? And he's like, because I wanted to, which is pretty good, reasoning. You'd have to do anything because you wanted to. It's so much better than the description I gave, I promise. Go on the internet when you get home and search for Improv Everywhere, carousel, horse race. You'll enjoy it a lot more than me telling you about it. That's like talking about a book or a movie. You haven't seen it. You haven't read it. You have no idea what I'm talking about. It's not very entertaining. I'm sorry I wasted your time doing that. So Improv Everywhere, though, these things that they do, they call them missions, which is unique because we use mission in a different term in the church, right? So they call them missions, and they have two reasons for doing this. If you've heard me talk and show one of these videos before, I've probably told you this, but here they are again. Part one, they want to create a scene of surprising joy, which on its own is pretty cool, right? I mean, if you walked out of here today and you're like, I want to create a scene of surprising joy today, I would guess that you're going to have a good day. You're at least going to have a good memory from today if you're able to be even remotely successful in doing that. And then the second part is they want to also give people a story to tell. So they not only want to surprise people with joy and create a scene of that, but that they want other people to witness it, to experience it together in community, and to tell people about it, which is pretty cool, right? Don't we all want to be part of things that we're pretty excited about, and then we go tell people about? When you see a really good movie, you want to tell people about it. They have to remind you that they don't want to hear about a movie they haven't seen. When you read a really good book, you want to find someone else who read that book so you can talk about it, right? We want to share those kinds of things, especially when they bring some sort of hope and joy into our lives. Now, words and stories and images have a power. The words that have been used to describe you and the stories from your life thus far have a unique power. And not just on you either, but on others and on the world. Images have power as well. I mean, how else can you explain why a small photograph from a day many years ago can bring back emotions, maybe even the same feelings that you had on that day when the photo was taken? And plus, Instagram just sold for $1 billion, so at the very least, images have a ton of value. Now, my hope for our time together this morning is that we can expand both our individual and our collective imaginations about what God is up to in the world. Because when that happens, it opens up all sorts of new possibilities. When we allow ourselves to comprehend more creative and imaginative ways that God is active in the world, we more regularly experience God's hope, love, forgiveness, and freedom. All things that are out there in this good, this very good world, just waiting for us to discover and experience. Now, in reality, I think that the world is a mostly wonderful place. Would you agree with me? I'm not saying it's completely 100% wonderful. There's some stuff in the world that's not wonderful. There's some people. None of you. You guys are great. But there are some people that aren't wonderful in the world, right? But for the most part, the world is a wonderful place. I was at a wedding last night, which is a great place to experience the wonderfulness of life and experience, at least seeing from afar, the love that people can have for each other. Now, this was one of the most uniquely multi-generational events that I've been part of, and I'm speaking of the dance floor in particular at this wedding. So picture this, a very full dance floor, not quite as warm as this, but it's starting to get a little hot. Ages of the people on the dance floor range from about 2 to maybe 75 or 80. And it was near the beginning of the dance, you know, so before some of the older people leave to go back to their hotels and home, or they at least go sit on the outside in the tables and talk and surrender the dance floor to the young people that really, really want to tear it up. And we're listening to one of those instant classics from the group LMFAO, which we all know and love. And you had 75-year-olds. And in particular, this was the wedding of the daughter of someone I used to work with at a church. The whole staff of a church I used to work at was out on the dance floor. And these people are not young, not hip. Very nice people, but not young and hip. And they're dancing to LMFAO, and I don't know if it's really dancing or they're just kind of moving like this, and there's little kids and all sorts of people. It was just truly unique in that I will never, ever experience something like that again, because it was a combination of the people who I've known from a very different context. Working in a church is not dancing to LMFAO. It's way different. And then just all the ages of people that were sharing this experience together. Well, a few moments after that song and that moment, people still dancing, some people sitting on the sides, having a drink, enjoying the night, just kind of the glow of the wedding was still in the air and affecting everyone. And this really good song, now LMFAO's not good, an actual good song came on, and it was this classic song that you all know, you've at least heard, by Louis Armstrong. And I was planning to talk about that song this morning anyways. It's a song that has been kind of stuck in my brain since I heard it as a little kid. But some of you know what it is. When I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Louis Armstrong, great jazz musician, died about 40 years ago, but his voice is still reminding us of the perspective that he saw the world with. I don't know if we're going to get to actually listen to it because I only see one slide up there still. Another homework assignment. Go watch Improv Everywhere on YouTube and then go look up Louis Armstrong. There we go.
What a wonderful world.
Good save there. You had it on your iPod or something? Nice. Spotify. Give them a plug in church. So you guys know that song, right? I mean, how beautiful is that song, really? Louis Armstrong just singing it out. You're lucky I didn't try to sing that to you. That would have been bad. But the word even wonderful, full of wonder. When I think of people who are full of wonder, I usually think of kids. I don't think of adults. Somewhere along the way, our wonderment has just been gone. It's been squashed by whatever has happened in our lives. But kids, they see the world and everything in it with more mystery and adventure than others. My niece Claire is 3.5 years old, and I love being around her because she lives with that spirit of whimsy that most of us lost a long time ago. So being around her helps remind me what life was like before everything got so bleeping ridiculous and serious right? You guys know what I'm talking about because you've experienced it yourself. I have a few, this is slideshow time of me and my niece. So not too long ago, we went to the park. That's not her. There she is. So this is Claire. And I was babysitting her and her little sister, Abby, who's just over one. And we went to the park down the street from their house. So it's a Friday night, nice night before it got really hot and humid like this. And we're just on the swings. Now, you and I might think, a swing, that's okay. That can be fun for a couple minutes, and then my butt hurts, and I got to get off and go do something else that's productive. But for Claire, this is the greatest life can be, is in a swing. And of course, when your uncle's giving you underdogs, it's pretty great too. But just look at that smile. There's no worry in that face. That little girl is not concerned about anything except for going higher on that swing. Another story about Claire that I have a picture to support as well. So I moved to St. Paul not long ago. I move every year. That's one of the rites and passages of a young adult. You get to move once a year so that the address on your checkbook and your driver's license is actually not the license or the address that you live at. It's really fun. You can dodge medical bills that way. I don't recommend it, but you can. So I moved, and she had never been to my new place. So I was really excited they were going to come over. And there was this little, I live in this neighborhood called St. Anthony Park. And there was this little art festival going on. And they had people with craft tables. They had food trucks. They had live music. And then they had some animals. So she came in the front of my building, didn't know any of this was going on. I had known because I had to move my car really early in the morning that in my parking lot, which you're looking at, was pony rides. Now, I knew that she was going to get really excited about pony rides. So she ran around in my apartment and got really excited to look at everything and crawl into the cupboards and do all the things that kids do. And then we went to my back door, and there's a window, but it's about this high. She's about this high. And so she's sitting at the door, and I go, Claire, there is something really exciting on the other side of this door. I cannot wait for you to see it. And so she's, getting jittery like a 3.5-year-old does. And we open the door, and right there are like 10 ponies walking in circles. And she just like freezes. This is blowing her mind that her uncle's place has ponies right outside. And she looks at me and she goes, I'm going to ride one. And I'm like, yes you are. You're about to ride that pony. So she got up and just, you can't really see her face, but so much joy. I mean, she was kind of caught between wanting to laugh hysterically because she was so happy, but trying to be calm and cool and mature, because she's at that age where she's trying to show that she's above some of that kind of childish stuff. So, very, very fun. But that wonderment, that whimsy that we have lost along the way, however we can recapture that to remember that it is very good. So now the slide of the advertisement. So this is a Target ad, and if you go back a couple, there was a Nordstrom ad. These were from this last spring. I don't know if you guys look at the Sunday paper and the ads. It's one of my hobbies on the weekend is to look at the ads. Look at all the stuff that I can't afford. It's fun. And so there's a little boy on the far left on this one, and if you go ahead to the Target one again, the same little boy is on the far left. I do not know his name. And you might not notice it at first glance, but I read some people talking online about this little boy, and he actually has Down syndrome. Don't know his name or anything about him, but he's a child model, hopefully just like part-time, because he should stay in school. It's, he should keep his education going too. But there was some people talking about this online saying, in the inclusive world that we live in now, this is just the next good example, I think, of people making sure that, this little boy is going to grow up and he's going to have certain challenges like we all do. But one of them is going to be that he's different in a way that some people are uncomfortable with. They're not really sure how to treat him. So he's been in these ads, and I think there's a couple other. I've seen an ad on the back of buses for, I think, Medica or some health insurance company with a grown man with Down syndrome. And I think it's great to kind of raise people's awareness that people are people. Who cares? And they needed to be treated as such. Well, there is a writer named Gabe Lyon, and he has an 11-year-old son who has Down syndrome. This is not his son. But in response to the attention that these ads were getting, he wrote something because he has now had 11 years as the father of a son with Down syndrome to realize that people are not always sure how to act around his son. They're not sure how to treat him. Sometimes they kind of put their foot in their mouth, and they're not really sure, how to act appropriately. So here's what he's noticed, because he thinks that people... Scared is a bad word, but they're not really sure how to act around his son, whose name is Cade. And so here's what he says. He says, certainly, the reason they're scared, the reason they act weird, isn't because his physical disability threatens them. Rather, Down syndrome children pose a different kind of threat to society. The in-your-face reminder that our aspirations for perfection may be flawed. People like my son disrupt normal. Whether it's his insistence that everyone he says hello to on the busy streets of Manhattan responds in kind, or his unfiltered ability to hug a lonely wheelchair-bound homeless man without hesitation. People like my son bring new dimension to what normal ought to be. And to him, I'd say amen. He's absolutely right. What is normal anyways? Except for love, acceptance, forgiveness. Now, Jesus said this, "Let the little children come to me, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." I know there's a child inside of all of us still, somewhere down there. Finn was a good example for all of us today. Now, just a warning, I'm about to read something, and I really like it, and I wish I had written it, but I didn't, so I'm going to read someone else's stuff rather than coming up with my own. And it's important for you to remember one thing, and that is that I'm reading from a book. Now, I did not write this book, so I'm not speaking in first person, even though the author writes in first person. Okay, we clear on that? Now, this is very important that you remember, because near the end of this thing that I read, and I'm going to get really into it, to the point where you're going to think two things. First, you're going to think, wow, he's a really good reader. He must have done great in school when reading was involved. And to that, I'd say, thank you, I did. And second, you're going to say that part near the end where he talked about wearing pink shoes, he was so believable because he was reading so well that I thought it was him, and I don't think he would wear pink shoes. He might wear a pink shirt, but I don't think he'd wear pink shoes. So that's where you need to remember that I am reading something someone else wrote. I do not wear pink shoes. Okay? We clear? I got to take a drink of water because this is going to be good. Okay, so this is from a book called Cold Tangerines. I love this. I live according to my faith when I love a meal that has been prepared carefully, when I notice texture and color and taste, when I let the flavor and scent of something fresh from the ground surprise me and bring me back to life. I demonstrate my theology when I dance all night with people I love, because this life is worth the best celebration we can offer up to it. I thank God every time I eat crusty bread and garlicky olives, and when I smell clean laundry and hear that little squeak of fingers on a guitar. For me, what God said when he made the world is a prayer. It is good. This world, it is good. The beauty of a perfect green apple is good. The first steps of a child are good. Watching my grandparents dance in their kitchen is good. It is good. I have to remind myself that it is good. I have to create hope in my life because there's something inside me that has radar for the bad parts of life. I walk into the kitchen and all I can see are crumbs on the counter, and I look in the mirror and I don't even see my face. I just see all the potential wrinkles forming. I have a dark worst case scenario sensor and it takes over. It's all true. There are crumbs on that counter. I am definitely getting wrinkles. I just don't want to live in only that reality because there's another reality, a better one. Hope and redemption and change are real and they're happening all around me. So I choose to act out of that reality because the other one makes life too hard day after day. Life is painful and we carry with it so much disappointment and heartbreak, but I'm fighting to save some space inside me where I can create hope. I can't live there in the disappointment anymore. I've missed whole seasons of my life. I look back and all I remember is pain. I guess I went to work or to class during that time, but I don't really remember. I wasted a lot of time wishing that I was different. I didn't love the gift of life because I was too busy being angry about the life that I was given. I wanted it to be different, but being angry didn't change those things. It just wasted time. I can't take away the things that have happened to you or to me, but what we have, maybe as a reward for getting through all of the other days, is today. Today is a gift. And if we have tomorrow, tomorrow will be a gift. It's rebellious in a way to choose joy, to choose to dance, to choose to love your life. It's much easier and much more common to be miserable. But I choose to do what I can do to create hope, to create life, and the act of celebrating connects me back to the life that I love. We could just live our normal day-to-day lives, saving all the good living up for someday, but I think today, just plain today, is worth it. I think it's our job, each of us, to live each day like it's a special occasion because we've been given a gift. We get to live in this beautiful world. When I live purposefully and well, when I dance instead of sitting it out, when I let myself laugh hard, when I wear my favorite shoes on a regular Tuesday, that regular Tuesday is better. Right now, around our house, all the leaves are falling, and there's no reason that they have to turn electric bright red before they fall, but they do, and I want to live like that. I want to say, what can I do today that brings more beauty, more energy, and more hope? Because it seems like that's what God is saying to us over and over. God's saying, what can I do today to remind you again how good this life is? You think the color of the sky is good now? Wait till sunset. You think oranges are good? Try a tangerine. He's a crazy, delightful, mad scientist, and he keeps coming back from the lab with great, unbelievable new things, and it's a gift. It's a gift to be a part of it. I want a life that sizzles and pops and makes me laugh out loud, and I don't want to get to the end or to tomorrow even and realize that my life is a collection of meetings and pop cans and errands and receipts and dirty dishes. I want to eat cold tangerines jeans and sing loud in the car with the windows open and wear pink shoes and stay up all night laughing and paint my walls the exact color of the sky right now. I want to sleep hard on clean white sheets and throw parties and eat ripe tomatoes and read books so good that they make me jump up and down. And I want my everyday to make God belly laugh. Glad that he gave life to someone who loves the gift, who will use it up and wring it out and drag it around like a favorite sweater. What if, all at once, all the shabby, tired, used-up bodies and minds started to wriggle and pop like they've been dropped in a deep fryer, sizzling and dancing, transformed into motion, and something that has been deadened and distracted by the tension and noise of this world comes to life anew, makes us wiggle and like a fritter in a frying pan, anointed and taught to dance, because we were made for motion, for arching up toward God with all the energy and passion of a thunderstorm, lightning slicing through a sleepy world to remind us that we serve a fast-dancing God, a God who set this world whirling and crashing through space so that we could live from our toes and drum out the pulse of a billion veins carrying lifeblood to a billion hearts, temples to a God that got his hands dirty making us from dust. Let's get dirty in his name. Let's sizzle and pop in his name. Let's dance and shimmer and scrawl out our stories across the sky like he taught us to. Let's echo his words and let our lives speak those words. It is good. We all want life to be like that, right? We want to live with the kind of passion and whimsy. We want to be full of wonder. We want to be like kids. We wish that we didn't have some of the experiences we've had. The pain, the trust issues, all the hurts that we carry with us that you know that you can't actually totally forget. But you want to live beyond them. You want to truly believe that the world and the people in it are not just good, but very good. We've all fought some battles. We've fought battles with ourselves, with each other, and even with God. There's the story in Genesis 32 where Jacob wrestles with God. And at the end of it, he walks away with a limp. And in a lot of ways, I think we see injuries as a bad thing. We think that because we've been hurt, that nothing good can come from that. And what I would submit to you today is that sometimes having a limp is okay. It's actually a good thing. Because like Jacob, wrestling with God, wrestling with ourselves and experiencing the pain that life can cause, is a reminder that we've experienced something, that we have encountered God. If you believe that God is involved in your life, that probably means, like anyone else involved in your life, that you're not always going to get along with God. You're not always going to agree with God. And I don't know who I am to tell you this, but I'm here to tell you that that's okay. You have permission to disagree with God, to fight God. But in that, you also have reason to believe that having a limp is okay. So limp out of here proudly today, knowing that just like the beads of sweat that are dripping down your face, you have been here and you've had an encounter with God, and that's not always comfortable. So let's pray. God, thank you for creating each of us, the people that we call family or that we are in close relationship to. For the world around us and all the life that you have brought into being, for creating it to be good, help remind us that it is very good. And help us to live today and go out and cause some scenes of surprising joy, to live lives that are worth telling stories about. In your name we pray. Amen.